Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. Today we have a really special kind of show that, first of all, there's a warning. If there's kids in the room, you might want to listen to this later because there is some explicit talk by my guest, but it's totally absolutely worth it. It's not worth your kids listening to, perhaps, but it's worth you listening to later if you can stomach that sort of thing, because my guest pushes me in a way and we push each other, and where the interview typically ends for Hack the Entrepreneur, we go for about another 10 minutes. And I was going to edit it out, but then I actually decided to leave it in, and you'll hear me and my guest sort of struggle with trying to continue going, but we both feel that it's the right thing to do. And I know that we get to somewhere really interesting that will really, really truly help you. And so I wanted to keep this in. So it's a bit different than usual, but I hope you enjoy it. That being said, I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today started building websites for real estate companies at the age of 22. He initially started doing this, though, from his parents' toy closet after he was scammed out of $12,000 for a sham online business and could not afford his own apartment. Starting over again with almost nothing, he asked countless questions and passionately learned about the real estate company's problems, and as a result, my guest's business grew very, very rapidly. Now he wants to help people like you and me. He describes himself as the head honcho of The Foundation, a six-month online mentoring program through which entrepreneurs learn about starting and scaling companies. Now, let's hack Dane Maxwell. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Schoolhouse. Schoolhouse is a New York-based and globally inspired brand design agency. When subjective experiences challenge you as an individual, dare you to take creative risks, and ask individuals to define the collective versus the collective defining the individual, life and experience serve as your schoolhouse. This is why Schoolhouse is about finding your brand truth and not just your brand story. Authenticity, collaboration, and expression keep Schoolhouse sharp, excited, and honest about the work they do. They know the value of client relationships based on quality and trust. They are Schoolhouse, the branding brand. Learn more at weareschoolhouse.com. And you can also follow them through Instagram. To find out more and sign up for the Schoolhouse Weekly, go to weareschoolhouse.com today. And we are back on Hack the Entrepreneur with a guest that I'm very, very, very excited to get to talk to. Dane, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today.
You're welcome, John.
All right, let's jump straight into this. Dane, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
The one thing that I've done that's been the greatest contributor to my success so far. Is that right?
Yes.
I appreciate the question and its desire for simplicity. And I appreciate the question and its desire to make it boil down to one thing. And I can probably actually give you an answer.
with a large preface.
Yeah, with a large preface. You cannot be anyone that you want to be. You just can't do it. You can try really hard, but you know, a guy that's born 4 foot tall is not going to slam dunk a basketball. And a guy that's born 5'5" and 120 pounds is not going to be a lineman. And I think it's a crock of crap that we've got this hocus pocus junk out there saying that you can be anything that you want to be. You can't. You can certainly try. And the harder, and if you're trying to be something that you're not made for, maybe you end up accomplishing it at a great price. Or you can be who you've always been designed to be. And as soon as you accept that reality, that you were born with unique gifts, you were born with unique talents, you were born with certain things, your life gets a lot easier and you become a lot happier. Because you cannot be anything that you want to be. You can only be what you've been designed to be. And you know if you've been designed to be an entrepreneur because you're thinking about it. You know if you've been designed to be an entrepreneur, if you're not fulfilled in your job, you know you've been designed to be an entrepreneur if you want to build your own thing in the world. By simply having that desire, that's a pretty good indicator. Because not everybody really wants to build their own thing. But there are a few people that do. And if you have that nudge inside of you, that voice inside of you that's saying something's not right at your job, then you know.
So,
and that's the greatest thing I can tell you, is that as soon as you step into designing who you need to be, that's the preface. And I heard you just speak in there, John, but let me just say one last thing.
Yeah, of course, of course.
Thank you. The next most important thing is to focus on your state of being. Now, it's fascinating that the one thing that would help more people than anything in the world, the one thing that would help people more than anything, is the one thing that almost no one wants. And that is work and focusing on your state of being. Nothing's going to prepare you for the journey. There's a book called The Hard Thing About Hard Things. I have not read it, but my good friend read it. My good friend is a phenomenal entrepreneur. He's got his life straight. He's got an amazing marriage, a baby girl, a business that's just partnered in partnership with Elon Musk at Tesla, a business he's starting on his own. The guy is just a rock star. And he reads The Hard Thing About Hard Things, and I ask him, hey, what'd you learn about that? Is Hard Thing About Hard Things talks about how to be a CEO. He said, well, I learned that I'm basically fucked. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, I've learned that there's basically no book, no preface, no strategy, nothing that will actually prepare me for this. And that I'm basically screwed. And that I have to know that going in. And I tell you what, that's very liberating. So the one thing that everyone needs and almost no one wants is work and focus on your state of being. And the way that you work and focus on your state of being is you undo all of the BS that's in your mind. You undo the BS that business is scarce or business is hard or money is limited or money is scarce. You undo the crap that says that you can't start a job. You can't start a business if you have a full-time job. You undo the crap that says you can't start a business without an idea. You undo all of that. And in the undoing of that, you work on your state of being to the point where you sit and your confidence boils down to no external circumstance. It boils down to no thing outside of you, but your confidence comes from your pure existence. And when you get to the state of being, where you're at that state of being, where you have undone all the crap and you're being who you've been designed to be, that's when a lot of magic happens.
Wow. So you said a lot of stuff, and now I'm kind of stubborn in, I still want to know what your thing is. Like, you talk about how you have to figure out what, like, you can, a 4-foot player cannot be a basketball player. That's true. And it's a whole nother thing talking about whether people are born entrepreneurs or not. I don't necessarily think that they are.
No, they're not.
They can be, you can learn how to do this stuff, but I still want to know you as a person, as an entrepreneur.
It
seems like you have a clarity and a confidence within yourself. Is that your thing? Is that, you know what I mean? Like, I don't mean in a teaching, I don't mean what is the one thing other people should have? That's not what we're talking about. I literally want to know, Dane Maxwell, if you had to boil it down to being like, I'm an amazing, I can put together a team. I can, you know what I mean? I can clarify my ideas and put them on paper. I can just the confidence to just screw everything up. And you know what I mean? There's something there, obviously, within you. Because you do cool shit. And you know what I mean? And I know I totally respect how you're trying to get around it, but let's do it.
Yeah. I respect you. I say hell yes to this. I do. I do have one thing. I was thinking about something else that someone else could implement. I have a lot of things, and I have one thing that's really present. And I didn't mean to say that you're either born an entrepreneur or not. That's absolute BS.
Right. I agree.
There's no way you're born to be an entrepreneur. I was at a conference once, and they're like, this guy's like, who do you think's born to be an entrepreneur? Are you born or not? And then like he plays this Michael Dell video about the creator of Dell, and like Michael Dell was starting his first business when he was 9. And my partner and I were fucking furious. We're like, what is this crap? They're like, oh man, if I didn't start businesses when I was 9, I must not be able to be an entrepreneur. No, yeah, that's crap.
It is.
You can be an entrepreneur. And the way you know if you've been designed to be an entrepreneur is if you have that desire. Nice. If the desire is there, then that's usually a pretty good indicator. It's a great equalizer. You don't have to be a certain height or anything like that. You don't even have to have a certain like personality type. You can all personality types I've seen as entrepreneurs. The one thing that I have is I have this perspective that I can, my thing is I take action consistently and then I allow a business to emerge. I take action consistently and I allow a business to emerge. That means first that I'm taking action, which most people are not doing. And then my Skype is also here on this, keeps beeping.
So
let me just mark that do not disturb. This is so annoying because I actually have to do this like a few times a day and it keeps coming back to online. Maybe there's some like evil Skype dwarf that does that. No. So what I do is I take action consistently and I allow a business to emerge. So the first thing that I'm doing is I'm taking action. That's what most people aren't doing. And then the other thing that I do that I find that's very unique is I allow a business to emerge. So that means I'm not forcing a business to emerge. It means I'm not fighting to make a business work. I'm just allowing a business to emerge. So when you start to adopt this mindset, business becomes really abundant and fun. So what happens is if I take a consistent action and then I allow a business to emerge, then I'm a steward and a servant and being of service to this emerging business that I'm not taking credit over, that I'm not in control over. I'm not in control over if a business works or not. I'm not in control over if a business is successful or not. It's whether or not the world responds to it. Mm-hmm. And then in that response, then yes, I can determine if I tank or succeed the business, but I don't make the business about myself. I've never made the business about myself. It's always been about serving other people. So when I take action consistently and I allow a business to emerge, I have this perspective, this one thing that I do where I talk to people. And then when they're talking to me, I get all these like hints of things that they could do to solve that problem. And out of those problems that are solved, that's how all these different businesses start to emerge.
Nice. Do you mean like sort of build an audience around an idea or a concept and then look for what business emerges out of that?
Yeah, you could do it that way. I'll give you an example. So like we get featured on Pat Flynn's podcast, Smart Passive Income. And it's very hard to get featured on that podcast. I've been on it 2 or 3 times. I've even been featured on it where I'm the first guy to ever interview Pat on his own podcast.
I saw that.
Now, how did that happen? So I write, he's an amazing guy.
Yep.
I don't know if I'd call him like a friend because we don't hang out on a personal level, but we could probably say we're friends. We're acquaintances. We have cell phone numbers. We text everyone every now and then. But whether we're friends is another story. Now, the first time, you know, someone reaches out and tries to get a podcast scheduled and he's like, oh no, sorry. Like there's like 200 people ahead of you. You'll be featured in like a year and a half. And so I say, well, Pat, tell me about the most painful thing that your audience is facing right now. And he said, well, you know, the most painful thing about my audience is that they have a strong pain with being able to take action. They just really struggle with taking action. And I replied back and I was like, you know, it just so happens that I specialize in helping people take action. And I actually have an entire framework that is very unique in its nature and enables people to take action where they used to have resistance. I'd love to share it with your guys for free. He said, I'd love to have it too. And I was like, great. Can we schedule an interview any sooner? He's like, yeah, let's do it like next week. So what happened there? That's the one thing. So what happens is like, it's not about the first step that I take. It's about how I respond after the first step. So the first step is like, okay, I go to Pat and I'm like, hey, Pat, can we get an interview? Sorry, you got like 2 years ahead of you. what would most people do in that? Okay, cool. I'll wait 2 years or whatever. Like what I made in that decision is I said, okay, tell me about your greatest pain, Pat. Well, my audience, I need to take action. And Pat really cares about his audience. So I served his audience with that. And then I got on Smart Passive Income. And I didn't do it in a manipulative or like secretive way. It's like super honest and the highest of integrity. And that podcast got like 300 comments or something, I think. And so that's what it is. It's that I know what to do. I seem to know what to do after the first action is taken, where other people seem to be totally stuck. Like everyone can take that first step. And then after the first step, if they get rejected or the result doesn't go the way they want, they kind of get frozen. That's where my genius comes in. And I'm just able to see this perspective that makes things work. And that Pat Flynn, I've done that. That is like one of countless examples I can give. And the reason I didn't want to tell this is the one thing is because at the beginning, before we recorded the podcast, you said you wanted to humanize entrepreneurs, and that one thing doesn't really necessarily help people take action. But let me tell you, that perspective that I have done everything in my power to make that unconscious skill as conscious as possible. And it's imbued and embedded throughout our foundation program, which is why people that are at 9 to 5 join our program, leave entrepreneurs. And that's why people that graduate the foundation go on to become remarkable entrepreneurs that are doing some pretty incredible things.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I love as you were saying the story about Pat Flynn, it's funny because I remember when I was starting this podcast, I think it was July of last year, I had actually emailed you to see if I could get onto your show. And you responded, we typically don't have guests on anymore because we're 200 or 300 shows in, whatever it was. And then you're like, but tell me what you can do for my audience. And I'd never had somebody respond with that. And I gave you what I thought was a good response, but apparently it wasn't because I didn't get on the show. And that's hilarious because now that's exactly what you do. And that's what you are expecting from other people. And that's cool. I love it.
You know how you could have replied to that? Do you want to know what I would have replied to that?
Yeah.
What's the greatest pain that your audience faces?
I know. You just said it. I know. And now I know how to reply to that. But I'm saying it's funny because I totally forgot I did that until you said it. I was like, wait a minute, this guy did that to me. That's hilarious. And
that's funny. That's my team. That's the team. My team's incredible. Our team's incredible. And they're trained very well. I'm pretty impressed that that's what they did.
Yeah. I'm going to look that email up when I get off this because I want to see that.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, business is really simple and straightforward. Like when you understand this, like the question is like, all right, well, what business can I start? Like, how do I start this business? And it's like, well, that's the bad question to ask. It's like, go out into the market and ask what the pain is and stop making a business about yourself. Listen, your business is not about you. It's never been about you. And that's like actually some of the best news you could ever hear in your life, because if it's not about you, then it doesn't mean it's about your credentials or about your past or about your history, about your degrees, about your current situation. If it's not about you, then that means that you, like, it doesn't matter what, where you, who you are or where you're from. You could be a 6-year-old in India, and if you find a painful problem that someone wants to have solved and you can solve it, they'll pay you for it. It doesn't matter. So it's the coolest thing in the world when you flip selling around and you make selling noble and you make selling easy and effortless. And I'll never forget when I was selling this product, agentcarecenter.com. It's a business that's been around for like 6-7 years. It's done about $5,000 a month, pretty consistently, maybe a little under that for like the last 5, 6, 7, maybe even 8 years. And I haven't even really touched it. It's my smallest business too, as well. And I was sitting at a table with this real estate broker at a conference. He's like, all right, so Dane, tell me about your product. And I said, well, what do you need to know to make a decision? And he said, nothing. And I said, great, we'll get you set up next week. He said, great. And that was the end of the conversation. And literally, like, when you adopt that framework where it's like, literally, it's like, hey, what do you need? What pains do you have? And then like, it's just magic. It's like, it's so much easier than people make it out to be.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I have a question that I think you're going to have a good response to. Struggles and failures as entrepreneurs, as human beings, one of our greatest struggles, not only when we're getting going, but even as we're in growing businesses, one of the greatest struggles is the fear of being wrong, making a mistake and failing. So Dane, can you walk us through how to be wrong?
Yes. What an amazing question. Like, you asked that question in such a way that it, thank you for the way that you asked that. Launching a failed product as an entrepreneur probably ranks up there with one of the most unpleasant experiences in life. Almost as unpleasant as like a partner leaving you, or in some cases, even maybe someone passing away. Especially when you consider if you've invested like 6 months or a year into this idea and you bring it out into the world and the world does not respond to it in the way that you thought, which is why I say I don't ever get in that situation, because I allow a business to emerge. I don't try to make it emerge. And you get into a year and you launch it and it fails, it can be devastating. I've even heard of entrepreneurs committing suicide over this. Entrepreneur singular. I've heard one specific story. So my first very like loving piece of response is to unattach your identity from the success or failure of your business. And that one sentence is actually a very challenging thing to do, because it's not a simple decision. You can't just say, all right, I consciously choose not to tie my identity to the failure of this business, because it's a deeply entrenched, unconscious pattern in your body. And the way to do that is to make the unconscious part of you, the unconscious part of you that's attaching this identity to the failure, success, conscious. And we actually have a process for this that we teach. And there are books that you can read on the matter where you can like disassociate your identity from an outcome. That's the first. If you do that, you have achieved like what the 1% will achieve. And if you can do that, it actually makes the process of building a business so much more enjoyable. Because like I said at the beginning, it's not about you. It's never been about you. It's about what service you can provide someone. And so if it's not about you when you start, it's not about you when that thing fails. Notice I didn't say when you fail. It's when that thing fails. If you put a product out to the market and it doesn't work, the facts are that the world did not respond to that product. That's the fact. You cannot argue that. The world did not respond to the product. Now, what you make that mean is what, you're a failure? Well, why would you do that? Well, if you're out to prove anything, to please anyone, or to hide something, or to show something to someone, those are the four ways that you can find out very quickly. Four ways that you can find out very, very quickly whether you're out to do this business to like fill some fault in your identity. What, some perceived fault in your identity. There's nothing faulty about your identity at all. In fact, when you realize that the thing that's inside of you that's causing this faultiness, what your perception of faultiness or this brokenness or not enoughness or unworthiness, they're actually only emotional experiences that once processed and felt through, you can actually see clearly that you're like, whoa, this is crazy. And then your confidence just comes from your existence. Like I said, you undo all that crap at the beginning. So it's all very, very linked. So the first thing is you disassociate your identity from the success. The thing is, hey, the product didn't work. So, hey, maybe you just feel disappointed instead of devastated because it's not attached to your identity. The second thing is that if you start businesses with this framework where you never make it about yourself, then you probably won't launch a product that the market doesn't respond to. Because if you start a business in the way that we teach, or the way that I've done, then you just don't have hardly any risk, except for maybe some time. You don't get to a point where you're caught with your hands, like with your pants down and your hands are up. That doesn't seem to happen, because when you cut, okay, you sit down, you're like, okay, listen, this business is not about me. It's about the pain and service that I can solve in the world. There's pain in the world and I want to solve it. That's what the business is about. So it's not about you, right? then you start finding pain and you start building businesses around this pain. But it's no matter how I explain it, it's not going to happen until you've been able to do the work to disassociate your identity. And you can find out very quickly by asking four questions. What am I trying to prove? What am I trying to show? Who am I trying to please? And what am I trying to hide? And these four questions come from a very famous psychologist who's been on Oprah. And I was having lunch with him and I was telling him how much I was struggling in my life. He's like, oh, it's really simple. Just ask these four questions. He made it so simple to me. And so that's how you can typically start to explore and break apart the identity. Because then when failure is not about you, because the business is not about you, then you can sort of start to feel excited about what you would consider failure, because you would just be learning what's not working. But how do you get to that spot? Well, if you're committed to service, you're committed to solving pain, you break apart your identity from the success of it, then you have all this freedom. And it's incredible.
What do you have to prove? What do you have to show? Who do you have to please? And what do you have to hide?
Yeah.
Smart. And disassociating yourself from the failure and from your business in that way makes perfect sense when you say it. How do you pour, say, your heart and soul into your work or into your business and still keep it out of it and disassociate yourself with it? Or are you supposed to pour your heart and soul into your business?
That's actually the way that you do pour your heart and soul into a business.
Interesting.
When you want to detach from the outcome, that allows you to completely pour your heart and soul into a business. If you're pouring your heart and soul into a business for any of those answers to those four questions, you're not really pouring your full heart and soul into a business, because you're trying to unconsciously prove one of those four things. So it's actually the way that you do it. It's totally crazy. I'm like listening to myself talk right now too, and I'm just like, wow, this is all true.
Yeah, no, you're a smart dude. This is good. This is not how I was expecting this conversation to go. And it's one of those things where I don't know how I was expecting it to go, but this is not it. I know that for a fact. And I'm really happy with it.
And I have a few more minutes if you wanna take this a little longer than you usually do.
Yeah.
I feel like your audience members, I'm picturing your audience members listening to this, and I'm pushing back one thing here for like 10 minutes, because if we end now, we will leave people. My fear is that we leave people with more confusion than when they started. And so I feel like we should continue for a few more minutes.
Okay.
Does that feel present for you?
Yeah.
Okay. I deeply care about what you're doing, John. And I deeply care about the people that are listening to this podcast. And I did not have anyone to fight for me when I was going through what I would consider hell. I didn't have a single friend, and I did not have my parents at the time know how to protect my heart. So I went through the world a very, very lonely soul. And I didn't have people who said, I got your back. I didn't have people who said, I want to be there for you. Now, to be frank and direct, I have more money than I know how to spend. I don't need or have to work. So why do I wake up in the morning and do what I do? I do it to fight for the people listening to your podcast. When people come and join the foundation and they come in this fear, like, nobody ever attacks their self-esteem. Nobody ever belittles their confidence, and nobody ever makes them feel less than the miracle that they actually are, because that shit's not called for. And so we fight for people to see their value. And in that seeing of value and seeing the confidence, then finally they start to trust themselves. And when people start trusting themselves, I just get like so blown away. I'm just like, wow, that's incredible. And so that's why I want to extend this, is because I have a heart for fighting for people.
So at the beginning, you didn't have your parents to back you up. You didn't have people in your corner as you were getting torn apart, trying to do things.
Correct.
How did you, or when did you come to the realization, one thing, that you needed to have people in your corner? And then how did you get people in your corner?
People fought their way into my life, whether or not I wanted it. So how did I get through it? I went numb. I learned how to dissociate my body. And I gave up hope. After a few years, you know, constant rejection, constant whatever it is happening, and like nobody really supporting you, you really can only make one decision about yourself. For me, it was, I must be way too worthless to matter to anyone. So what do I do in that situation? I go numb. Then I start to read books. I start to find hope. And with a ferocity and a power that I've never knew that I had, I started companies over and over. And people just fought their way into my life, no matter how much I didn't want them there. To the point now where I am going through like intense, intimate relating programs to learn how to trust humans and let people into my heart so that I don't suffer in loneliness. And it's been amazing. I actually just finished a weekend, an intimate relating weekend, where for 6 months, one weekend a month for 6 months, I sit in a container with 20 other people, and they give us communication dialogues and frameworks for me to communicate with other people and let all of our unconscious stuff surface and be in relationship with each other about it. And it's been one of the most transformative things I've ever done in my entire life. It's brought happiness back into my life in a way that I hadn't experienced before. And so that's my answer to that question.
Nice. And I'm not sure where to go with this.
What do you want to know, John? We have 6 minutes.
I want to know more, I guess, about this Dane Maxwell that I hadn't been exposed to before, which is this personal, I guess, journey and struggle you've gone through and transformation into being, not just being an entrepreneur. Lots of us are just can be entrepreneurs, but I mean, you're successful. People typically don't say bad things about you. They say great things about you. In fact, people like Pat Flynn have you on a show numerous times. You're the one person who's interviewed him. It's interesting. And now to hear you talk, I don't know. I guess it's just an interesting journey that you're on. And I guess if you could, I don't know, it's too simplistic. If you could go back now, but because you can't, and that's not what it's about. It's about going forward. But
and I wouldn't change a thing going back.
Exactly. And I know it's stupid to try and change a thing. That's why I don't want to make that question. But there's people that look up to where you are. There's people that are going to listen to you on this podcast and say that, yeah, you have more money than you know what to do with. You can now go through these transformative weekends. You can do all these things that are kind of luxurious, and you've allowed yourself through business, right? But you weren't always there. There was a struggle where you literally need to make rent. You literally, all these things, right? And so I'm trying to make this connection between Dane Maxwell, say 10 years ago, and Dane Maxwell now, and not that you would change any of it, but you know what I'm trying to say? Like, it sounds so easy when we sit here talking and yeah, we don't have jobs. We don't have to, we have businesses that run and make money while we just chat on podcasts, right? And that's all fine and dandy for everyone, except for the fact when you have to go to work 50 or 60 hours a week to pay the light bill at home and to feed your kids and all that stuff, right? How do we make that transformation? How do we do that? How do we, rather than just joining the foundation, which obviously is recommended, but do you know what I mean? I'm trying to really remove this disconnect and connect the two places. And I know there's 1,000 steps in between, but even as a mindset, how do we transformatively do that to somebody listening? And you know what I'm trying to say?
How do you get to the spot where you get to talk on podcasts and do transformative weekends and have freedom?
Yes.
You pay a fucking price. How bad do you want it? You're working 50, 60 hours a week? Suck it up. You dig down deep and you find the raw creation power. You love yourself enough to live a life that you have pictured in your mind. I know no man who's free who hasn't paid a price for it. And that doesn't mean suffering. That means working out. That means putting in the work. There's no 7-minute abs. But you know what? It's actually really enjoyable. The process of sucking it up is actually fun and enjoyable. It's not like some point along it becomes not about the destination. Every entrepreneur that I've talked to got into entrepreneurship for very selfish reasons. I wanted money for myself. I wanted freedom. And then when they got in and they found that freedom, it became about something much greater. So I say, be selfish. Know that you're going to pay a price. You're going to put in hours. You're going to wake up and you're going to work when you don't feel like it. And when you do that consistently, you take consistent action and allow a business to emerge, like I mentioned. Allow that business to emerge. Don't force it. It's not about you. Let's say you wake up and, well, like our one business, one guy. So, you know, he's got an hour and a half to commute every day in addition to working full time. And now he's free. He's quit his job. He commuted on the train for an hour and a half every day. So the first 45 minutes on the way to work, he would make calls to business owners and he would ask them about what their pain was and try to serve them. And then for 45 minutes in the Wyoming wood. And in a year, he quit his job. He sucked it up. He paid a price. Now, if you're 80 or 90% happy in your life, it's pretty dangerous. Because, you know, 80 or 90% fulfilled isn't very nice either, in my experience. And so I just say that, like, that's what I did. You know, I sucked it up and I paid a price. You know, business got a lot easier for me when I just started solving painful problems. It's so fun, man. Like, literally, when you just, like, you sit, it's no longer about you, right? So you sit on the phone with a business owner and you're just like, hey, man, how can I serve you? And what is it that you're wanting? What's not working in your life right now? What do you want in your life? And then let's try and figure out a product or a plan that could get you there. And like you just as co-collaborative, it's so amazing. That's when business like that, it's like if you want to like a click, that was definitely a big click. Yeah. And then the other thing is education-based marketing is absolutely just, if you want to like absolutely slaughter your competition, just Google search education-based marketing. You study how to do that. You know, if you just commit to this, like if you do consistent, committed daily action, like I take consistent action and allow the business to emerge. If you're in it for consistency, oh yes, like yes to you, yes to you, yes to you. Like you're on the path. And remember I have to wrap up here, but I'll tell you this, this business mentor of mine, and he owns one of the top, okay, I'll tell you, this will be nice. It'll be a nice wrap up. Five more on a podcast. Okay. So I just pushing back an interview that I'm doing for our podcast right after this, but I want to tell you guys a story. So I'm one of my early business mentors. He owns one of the top 50 manufacturing firms in the country. And it's top 50 based on quantified data. It's like, you know, we produce this many parts with this little defects and that puts us in the top 50. So this is pretty badass. So what happens is I go to in Iowa at the time, I go to this entrepreneur institute in Okoboji, which is like where all the richest men in Iowa hang out. And I meet all the richest men in Iowa, collectively worth billion plus. And I take pictures with five of the men. Now, you don't have cell phones back then. Gosh, that's crazy to say. You don't have cell phones with camera technology back then. And so I had a camera. I brought like a digital camera with me. And I got photos with them of me shaking their hand. And then I went home and I wrote them all a personal thank you with our photo in a photo frame. Like I went to Target, I got a frame, I put the photo in, I wrote a thank you, put it in the mail. It was pretty exhausting. Like it's not the most like draining. It's not the most like it's not my first preference to do, but I paid a price and I wanted it bad. So I sent five of these out to the richest men in Iowa. And each one of these letters, I said, hey, will you please call me at my personal cell so I can be sure that you got this? Only one of the five people replied. And that was Bruce, the owner of this engineering manufacturing firm. When he called me, I said I wanted to be mentored by him. He said, great, how do you want to do that? And I said, I want to come visit you one time a month. He said, great. So that time of the month came. I put on my nicest clothes and I drove 4 hours to hang out with him for 4 hours. And then I drove 4 hours back. We hung out at his business. We hung out on his dock, on his house, on this lake. And there was fog around us on the dock. And he asked me, hey, so Dane, do you know what passive income is? Do you know what active income is? Do you know what all these things are? And I knew all of them because I had read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and I'd read the books because I wanted it bad. And I sat there with him and he gave me my first business idea to start, which bombed. It's like scheduling for hair salons, online scheduling for hair salons, way too many years before they were ready for it. And he became a very important man in my life. And I found him at an entrepreneur meetup. I took a photo with him. I sent a thank you note. I drove to him monthly for a day. And he taught me how to quantify things. He taught me the importance of numbers. When I sat down in his office at 10 a.m., he turned his computer screen over to me and he'd already made 40 grand at 10 a.m. that day. 40 grand. And he smiled and he said, that's good because I'm usually 40 grand in the hole every day I open these doors. So he broke even by 10 a.m. that day. I didn't know how to comprehend that kind of money at the time. I do now. 40 grand in a day is not unheard of. But I didn't know. But that's what I did. And why did I do that? Why did I go to an entrepreneur institute? Why did I take photos? Why did I send a thank you? And why did I drive 4 hours to go hang out with a guy one day a week and drive 4 hours back? Because I wanted it really bad and I paid a price. And it's those little things that I did that were cemented into an action that when my mom told me, hey, Dane, what are you going to do if this entrepreneur thing doesn't work out? What are you going to do if you have to go back and get a job? And I looked her in the eye and I told her with all the ferocity that I could, I said, I will never go get a job and I will not ever crawl on my hands and knees with my tail between my leg and hold my hands out for a paycheck because I couldn't figure out how to add value on my own in the world. And when you have things driven like a commitment by that, you know how to suck it up. You know how to pay the price. You know how to get things started. Now that was an angrier, younger 20-year-old. Today, I'm far more driven by love, far more driven by service, but that's how I started. You know, once you fulfill that, you're done. So that's what I would say to wrap the interview up, John.
Yeah. Suck it up and pay the price. There's no push button system. There's no easy way to do it. As you were going through your story, I mean, mine, it was 9 months that I worked my ass off. Literally, like, I worked 10 hours a day. Then I put my daughter to sleep. And then I worked till 3 a.m. Literally every day for 9 months to build my first business. And then I quit my job. And that was coming up in April 1st. That's going to be 3 years now. It's amazing. It's true. I'm not going to go back. And it was weird as I was struggling with the question. And then you answered, it's like, of course, John, you have to do like you did. You have to work your ass off for 9 months or 6 months or a year, whatever it is. You have to suck it up and you have to do it. There's no other way to do it. We can try and help you. We can try and find ways to make things better. You can learn from our mistakes, but we can't do the work for you.
And you know what? And you're going to work your ass off, but it's so much fun because you're doing your own thing and you're in full control. And if you're going to work your ass off for someone else, you might as well work on your own thing. And if you're not going to build your own dream, you're going to help someone else build theirs.
Exactly.
So why not spend the time working your ass off for yourself? And I have to take off here, John, but I just want to mention for those of you that are interested in following more of this kind of stuff, they can find a lot of great info at thefoundation.com.
Excellent. I will link to that in show notes for everyone. And Dane, just thank you so much for all that you do and for taking the time to join me and sharing so much with us today. I do appreciate it.
You're welcome, John. Take care, brother.
Dane, thank you so, so very much. So you're out there listening, and I hope you enjoyed that as much as I enjoyed partaking in that conversation myself. It was a lot of fun, and it really went some places that I wasn't totally expecting it to necessarily even go, but the places that we went, I think, were really, truly awesome and inspiring places for me and hopefully as much for you. So I go back through this conversation. It was a longer conversation than usual, and we carried on and we didn't edit it out for you. So I hope you enjoyed it the way it was like that. But now I have this difficult job of going back and picking out something to bring back to you. And I struggled with this one. This one was hard because there was a lot of different places and it kind of moved. The whole conversation kind of swayed and moved into something. And the whole ending part after we typically end was almost like it could have been the ending hack that I go to. But no, that would be too easy now, wouldn't it? So I went back because there was this one thing that was, it was the one, it was it. And I think that you're going to agree with me. I hope so. I really do. If you don't, by all means, track me down on Twitter at John Naster or email me, John, J-O-N, at Hack the Entrepreneur and tell me otherwise. But I think you will, because there was that one thing that Dane said. There was one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
No matter how I explain it, it's not going to happen until you've been able to do the work to disassociate your identity. And you can find out very quickly by asking four questions. What am I trying to prove? What am I trying to show? Who am I trying to please? And what am I trying to hide?
And that's the hack. Wow. Dane. This is one of the most profound hacks that I've had to deal with now, and just business ideas or mindsets in general and psychology of, I think, just a person that is going to be able to strive to do big things and also achieve happiness and not just live and like die within their own head, struggling always to want more and then to also, as you say, identify themselves with the outcome. That's the biggest thing I've heard. And it's so absolutely true. We do this as human beings, and especially as entrepreneurs, because we are creating businesses, creating ideas. We're creating either a blog post or a book or anything that we need to make and to possibly sell and to just put out there into the world. And when it doesn't work or when it fails, if you want to go that far, we tend to tie that to ourselves. That outcome is actually us. And it's us personally failing. It's because we seem to lack something within ourselves, which, as Dane very, very clearly states, it's not from within. And it's not something that none of us are lacking from inside. It's just how we deal with it. And this is amazing. Dane gives you now the four questions to ask yourself to begin this process of being able to disassociate yourself from your identity, that is, from the outcome. And that is, what am I trying to prove? What am I trying to show? Who am I trying to please? And what am I trying to hide? When you answer those questions, this will take your brain, it'll go from subconscious to conscious and will help you do this. And I don't know, Dane, that was intense. That was awesome. And thank you so much. So yeah, that was, here I am speechless again. I'm sorry, we have gone on really, really, really long for this episode, and I really, truly feel that it was worth it, and I will get back to my 30 minutes episodes because those are where I get to the essence of what makes these people tick, and I want to get it to you as without any fluff and without anything extra added and none of the chit-chat. I just want to get straight to the hacks. So we will get back to that format, but I really felt the way this conversation went that we needed to do it. So again, if you disagree with me, please email me. I would love to hear from you. I would love to have your hate mail. I'm totally joking. Well, I'm not. If you did hate it, then by all means, So it's also crazy if you hated the length of this and you're still listening at this point. Either way, I would love to hear from you. John, J-O-N, at hacktheentrepreneur.com. That's my email. Love it or hate it. That's it. Tell me. I'd love to hear. I really, really, truly would. And on that note, I will leave you. Thank you so very much. I will see you again next week. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.